Hello again. I'm Steve Murphy, a trust and estates attorney with McGuire Woods LLP, and this is Legacy Planning Once Removed, my podcast on legacy, property, taxes, family, and everything in between. In our last few episodes, we've been talking about passing property and wealth, but also more than that, passing values and relationships to the next generations. So I thought that in this episode, I'd spend a few minutes talking about a concept that's on a lot of my clients' minds. It's how to pass down the family vacation home. A lot of my clients are fortunate enough to have one of those great family properties. Maybe it's a farm, maybe it's a beach house, maybe it's a mountain house, maybe it's a condo in the city. These come in all shapes and sizes, but they have one thing in common. This is a gathering place, and it's been a gathering place perhaps for the entire lifetime of the donor. So imagine this place, generation one and generation two, maybe even spending summers or winters there. And then maybe even generation three, those grandkids playing hide and seek in the yard. Or imagine everyone, all these generations gathered around tables for holidays or birthdays. We have lots of terms for this kind of special place. And you can look around the internet and you can find different references. I like to call this type of property the family cottage. This reference to cottage suggests that it's maybe a little rustic, maybe even a little outdated. But there's something even more special going on here. It's not really about the property. And many clients ask, what happens to this property upon my death? And how can we keep this great thing going? I have a lot to say about that. And in my classes and in my presentations, I go on and on. There's lots to talk about. In fact, these days, when a client asks about this topic, sometimes I just send them my lecture notes and say, here's a bunch of issues to think about. So in this episode, I'm going to try to keep it relatively short. I'm trying to keep this to about 10 to 15 minutes. And I'll provide just a few scenarios and categories and issues to think about. So here we go. We've identified the goal. How to transfer the family cottage, how to keep this property going. So now let's think first about some concerns and some obstacles that might get in the way. So first, let's talk about taxes. Lots of websites talk about how to gift the family cottage in a tax-efficient way. But spoiler alert, taxes aren't really the problem here. As we'll see, the other concerns about property and relationships are much more important and present some really difficult challenges. But still, lots of people talk about passing the family cottage in a tax-efficient way. But this property isn't really a good option for making taxable gifts. Why? Well, because when we look at ways to make gifts, we look for assets that might appreciate in value, or we look for assets to transfer to the next generation now so they can start using them and benefiting from them now. But in the case of a family cottage, usually that's actually a depreciating asset. Usually it's pretty expensive to have a family cottage. So if you make that gift now, it's not an efficient use of gift tax exemption because the gift actually likely might lose value over time. And in the meantime, if you give away interest in the property now, then that actually gives up something really important, control and flexibility. And we'll talk about that on this episode. Second, let's talk about some non-tax issues with gifting the property. These are really important ones. Many clients love the idea of passing the family cottage to the next generation, but the question arises, does that generation actually want it? What if one child lives on another coast and can't use it? Or what if that child wants to establish his or her own vacation home in an environment like mountains or a beach or a city where the child would enjoy spending time? And as we'll see, ironically, if you pass the asset to children without conferring with them, this might even lead to tension and dispute. So let's start with some default rules as we think about how to pass the family cottage in the first place. If you pass property upon your death to multiple owners, then they are the owners for all purposes. This is simple, but like many of these strategies, it's simple to a fault. Let's assume you have three children, and let's assume they inherit the family cottage directly. That just means that each of them owns 33% of real estate. Under the law, they typically own it in a way called tenants in common, which just means they have a 33% interest in the entire property. And there aren't good default rules about who controls it or who can use it or what happens if one of them wants to sell their interest. And without those rules in place, tension and dispute can arise. And it can arise quickly. Or it could fester for years and then blow up. And maybe it's obvious to you of why that tension and dispute might arise, but let's just pause and clarify that. Sure, the owners might have some shared goals, but each person might view the property differently. So let's think about some categories. First, there's you, the founder, the owner of the property from the beginning. Then there's the heir. Maybe he or she spent a lot of time there as a child. There could also be heirs with less of an emotional attachment, or an heir who has a decreased emotional attachment over time. And then think about a third category of interested persons, maybe distant family members or in-laws. They have little or no emotional connection to the family cottage. Simply put, they might not have bought into your vision for the family cottage over time. And then for each of these groups, they might have different concerns. In many ways, these concerns are similar to concerns about passing a family business. You know, who gets to control it? Who gets to benefit from it? We think a lot about insiders and outsiders in family businesses. With a family cottage, are there insiders who have more benefit and control? Maybe those insiders get more of a benefit because they live closer and they can drive and use the family cottage. But maybe those insiders bear more of the sweat and the cost. Like they have to open the house up for the summer, or they have to respond to emergency calls in the middle of the night. Or are there outsiders in the family cottage who get less of a benefit, maybe just because they live further away? Or they might be seen as freeloaders who just get to show up for July 4th and demand a bed. So you can imagine this concern of insiders and outsiders could lead to tension and dispute. There's a lot going on here. But the good news is that if you are the owner of that kind of family cottage, then you can set up the structure you want right now. And you can put that in place so that upon your death, the property passes the way you would want. But also importantly, if you don't set up that structure, then the next owners after your death would be the ones to sit around and come up with that plan. And you can imagine this might lead nowhere. Or maybe even worse, it leads right to that tension and dispute. So right now is your opportunity to put those rules in place. And there's no right or wrong answer. And sometimes I compare this to fashion. There's no right answer in fashion, but there's a wrong answer. And in this case, the wrong answer is no decision at all. The wrong answer is ignoring this. Plenty of clients do decide to leave the property to their children outright. But if you decide to do that, at least I'd want to make sure that you've decided that this is really the best option based on all the concerns we'll discuss in this episode. First of all, I'd usually recommend putting the property into a limited liability company or LLC. Then the owners receive shares of the LLC. This provides a nice stage of setting up use, control, and ownership. These are the concerns we'll talk about for the next few minutes. Many clients also worry about the expenses of the property. So along with the real estate, they might put in some funds into that LLC with what I call an endowment. This might help with the expenses for a period of time to facilitate someone being able to use it, even if they can't afford to use it with their own personal funds or with other funds they've inherited. So with all that being said, let's talk about these categories of how to structure the family cottage to make sure it's passed to the next generations in the best way. First, let's think about use. Who gets to use it? There's a couple of options here. One is ad hoc. In this scenario, the owners just figure it out. We might hope for that, but without specific rules in place, that could lead to some people taking advantage or some people thinking that they're being taken advantage of. Another option is just to continue the customary use, maybe during the founder's lifetime. The owners go with what's always been done. I caution that this might not be a good approach because typically the family cottage has had that founder during his or her lifetime. That is, grandma and grandpa have always had the final say of who gets to use it and when and for what purpose. But once the founder has passed away or gifted the property, that is, once they are removed, another tie back to the title of the podcast, then the owners might behave much differently. They might view that customary use of the property very differently. So I generally like to su suggest some kind of scenario where use is tied to ownership, where the burdens of ownership are tied to the benefits of ownership. So, for example, perhaps people could use it in proportion to their ownership. Or perhaps the people could use it based on the family tree branch concept, where each branch of the family gets a certain allotted use each year. We could think of lots of options here. Maybe a distinction between prime and non-prime time periods. Some people like to use a rooming house or hotel model of when there's availability, or maybe everyone could alternate their ability to choose which slots they would like each year. But then think about the host of additional issues that come along with use of the property. Should people be allowed to bring guests? Should they be able to bring pets? What about smoking? What about parties? So you can see these concerns about use could lead to disagreement, tension, and dispute after the founder's passing. Now let's talk about a second issue, control. During the founder's lifetime, it's pretty easy to structure. The founder is in control. They make these decisions. But then after death, it's much harder to determine who decides, who controls the property. What about maintenance? Who decides how to maintain the property? In my experience, this is actually less of a concern. In fact, the family sometimes would prefer that a particular person handle all the maintenance. And that's pretty onerous. More of a concern, in my experience, is often improvements to the property. For example, what happens if one family would like a new kitchen? Well, who should design it and who should pay for it? What if a family doesn't use the property that much? They might think the old kitchen is just fine. So, in terms of control, I like to divide up this into different types of control or tasks, and maybe different individuals or families would have different responsibilities or rotating responsibilities. So, how about bookkeeping? How about scheduling the property and use of the property? How about managing the finances, like the endowment? Taking care of maintenance, we've talked about that. Taking care of improvements, we've talked about that. And lastly, let's talk about ownership of the property. This, along with use and control, can be a real concern as we think about how best to structure the ownership of the family cottage. The fundamental concern here is that people might view the family cottage very differently. Some might view it as an opportunity to use the family cottage and spend time there. But some might justifiably see it as more of a financial asset. And like many financial assets, maybe that capital is best cashed out and employed differently. So it's helpful to build in rules here about ownership. What if someone wants to sell their interest? Or what if someone wants more of an interest, wants to buy more of an interest? Again, this is why I like to balance the benefits of use with the burdens of use, or in this case, perhaps with the burdens of ownership. We could have buyout provisions where someone gets to sell or buy an interest, or you could even stage those provisions. Let's say so that generation two has one set of rules, they typically would have less flexibility if they want to sell. And maybe generation three and four has another set of rules, typically they would have more flexibility. But we also want to be mindful about third parties who might obtain ownership in the family cottage. What if a child has a creditor or a divorcing spouse? And suddenly that person claims an interest in the family cottage. We wouldn't want that. This is where helpful transfer restrictions can allow the rest of the owner's control of whether that other third party has any rights to the property. By the way, this might be a good opportunity to have the family cottage owned not by individuals, but by trusts. Owning property in trust provides a level of asset management and creditor protection, and we've talked about that in other episodes. So we've talked about how to structure the family cottage. We've talked about concerns about use and control and ownership, and maybe how to balance some of those concerns. So what are some models? What are some examples of how you might approach this? I think there's three general categories. First, there could be some kind of option where the kids just figure it out. Imagine this: upon death, the children could have an option of whether to receive their share of the inheritance in cash or shares in the family cottage. Then those who choose to have the family cottage can sit down and sort out the rules of use and control and ownership. This could work out just fine, but it puts all the decision-making power, for good and for bad, in the hands of those next generations. Second, there could be an option where the donor makes those decisions. I'd encourage this to at least be formally through an LLC structure with some basic rules about ownership baked into the legal terms. But many clients also like the idea of including a kind of letter of wishes or a mission statement, where they just lay out their wishes and their intent and their hope for how everyone will sit down and maybe make all the remaining decisions. But third, how about something very different? We've talked about before in an episode about the rich relative. I love this concept. We've talked about how the rich relative does a great job of transferring wealth, but also transferring values and relationships. And best of all, without fostering much of a sense of entitlement. So, how about this question? How would the rich relative treat the family cottage? Well, let's think about a rich uncle who has a vacation property. And let's say the rich uncle lets extended family use it. If my rich uncle offered to let me stay at his cottage, I would never say, no thanks. I'd prefer to stay somewhere else. Can I just have cash? So when we think about this family cottage as owned by the rich relative, it's something else entirely. There's less of a view of this property as some kind of delayed inheritance or as a substitute for other property. It's something else. It's just an invitation. Take it or leave it. So now the incentives shift. Now the incentive is to set up a structure where people want to use it. Because again, if people do use the family cottage and they stay connected, then we get all the other benefits of the family cottage to begin with, all those gatherings and relationships that are built there. When I approach the family cottage this way, this rich relative model, when I set up that kind of structure, it's all about putting in place very clear rules of use and control. But most importantly, it's about clarifying rules about ownership. And in this structure, someone who doesn't want to use the property doesn't get to cash out. They simply don't use the property. Of course, even in this rich relative model, you'd still need to think about how long it will last and what happens at the end of this period when the family cottage is really no longer serving its purpose. But you can sort that out as a secondary issue. So this rich relative model might be a very different approach. And when clients want to set up this kind of model, I encourage them to be very open with their family about how it'll operate, so there's no confusion upon death. You can imagine this kind of rich relative model of the family cottage could be quite surprising to beneficiaries who are expecting something else. So we've talked about a couple of models, maybe leaving it all to the decisions of the next generations, or clarifying rules about use, control, and ownership now and upon death. And lastly, this rich relative model. But again, there's lots of options and there's no right answer. The family cottage structure can be as simple or as complicated as you would like. But there is a wrong answer. And the wrong answer is no decision at all. I like to give my listeners some takeaways or some homework at the end of these episodes. In this case, maybe it's just that thought exercise where you go through how you would hope the family cottage can be used. But I'd encourage you to think about the family cottage as a means to an end. What are you really interested in facilitating? What are you really interested in transferring? And then the family cottage can be a tool to work towards that. I'm Steve Murphy, and this has been Legacy Planning Once Removed, my podcast on thoughtful estate planning. Thanks for listening.